Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the films A Man Called Otto, Plane, House Party, Koala Man, and The Pale Blue Eye. I'm also going to be talking about some news, The Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring the Britas Empire. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Just to put a heads up on everybody, this weekend, the Critics' Choice Awards will be taking place on Sunday night at 7 p.m. on the CW. Be sure to watch that. That's one of the award ceremonies that I'm involved in. I actually get a vote in that. You've all been listening to me all year, and you hear what I like and what I don't like, and you can go check out and see how much my vote agreed with everybody else's, so you can get a chance to kind of peek behind the curtains of award season. So check that out, the Critics' Choice Awards on Sunday night at 7 p.m. on the CW. And speaking of award season, we had the Golden Globes this week. And it's interesting because the Golden Globes disappeared for a year. And part of it was a COVID year, but it was also after the controversy of basically somebody looking into the Hollywood Foreign Press Association and finding out that they didn't have any people of color in it at all. It was all white people. And so that didn't have a good look for the Golden Globes. And plus, there are other minor controversies running around. So they kind of hid away for a little bit. But the Golden Globes were back. They didn't end up on a Sunday night, which is usually when award shows are, like, you know, the Critics' Choice Awards coming up. But they had it this Tuesday. And, you know, generally, people look at the Golden Globes as a possible precursor for the Oscar, even though it doesn't always connect, because they have multiple categories for genre. They have like drama versus musical and comedy. And so that sometimes gets a little bit weird in sussing out the nominations. And while the guy who did the White Lotus, which won for best limited series, he was apparently plastered when he went on stage and gave his acceptance speech, you did not get the cavalcade of drunk celebrities that you normally do in the Golden Globes. There are some weird things that happen with it, or interesting things rather. Angela Bassett won for Wakanda Forever as best supporting actress. And that's just notable because it's the first Marvel Cinematic Universe win in something like this for an acting award. The other thing that's interesting is the Fabelmans captured Best Drama, and it also got Best Director for Steven Spielberg, which bodes well for the Oscars, because the Fabelmans has not made a whole lot of money so far, but the fact that it's about old Hollywood, it's about a Hollywood icon, it's going to get a lot of love from the older crowd, and I think that absolutely came through with this. Is that going to be enough for it to win the Oscar? Who knows? Because it doesn't always compare one-to-one. The one award that I do take issue with, and while I never like to disparage anybody for winning an award, and I don't say that Austin Butler should not have won something, but the Golden Globes are very specific in breaking out drama category versus musical and comedy. And so Austin Butler won Best Actor in a Drama for the musical of Elvis. I mean, okay, yeah, no, it's not a musical the way like Showboat or Carousel or Sound of Music was, but certainly anytime they have an actor in a biopic, I believe when like Joaquin Phoenix was nominated for Walk the Line, that was under the musical category, and that was just a biopic of Johnny Cash. So I don't know why Austin, I mean, I know they wanted Austin Butler to possibly win that award, and that gives him a push for the Oscar. I mean, what happens with Brendan Fraser and The Whale? Who knows? Does that put him in jeopardy? There's always some sort of weird upsets that happen. So the Golden Globes, it wasn't all that scintillating of an award show. It had its moments, but it wasn't as funny as they were in the past. Now, moving on to box office, the big winner last week was Avatar. It won $45 million or something like that. And it's doing really well. It's pushing $2 billion globally. And of course, James Cameron has said, yeah, that's enough to warrant a sequel. They're going to do more Avatar movies. And he's like, well, I know what I'm going to be doing for the next 6 or 7 years. Boo-hoo, I'm so busy. Anyways, I was expecting Avatar to do well globally. And even though I enjoyed this Avatar sequel, I don't know, it just seems sort of like it was passing. I feel the same way about The Batman. When The Batman came out earlier last year, I mean, it was fine, but it just didn't seem as impactful and as groundbreaking or as memorable. And I think, honestly, 3 months from now, I'm going to be like, Avatar? Oh, yeah, I guess that was a movie. But what's interesting, the one that was the bigger notice over last weekend was Megan. Megan really overperformed. Megan ended up making like $30 million, which is almost unheard of for a movie of that type on the first weekend of January. It's not uncommon to have a horror movie open on the first weekend of January. But this is the best one of those brand new movies have done on that first weekend of January in like a decade. You don't see these numbers for that. You might see a number for a Conjuring movie, but the fact Megan just scored big. And even though it came in at number two, that's a big deal. And of course, that was enough for a small little movie like Megan, which I think costs like $12 million to make. I mean, it's already profitable. Now, Megan is guaranteed to have a sequel, and they're already going to be working on that. I wouldn't be surprised if you get Megan 2 coming out next January. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is coming out on February 24th, and that is Linoleum.
My dad used to always say, there are two kinds of people in the world, Cameron. Astronomers and astronauts. Some look at the stars, others swim in them.
He's like my antithesis.
What?
Some old Russian rocket fell from outer space and it crashed in our backyard.
You've got this pile of rocket crap right here. Why don't you just build your own rocket?
It's not that simple.
Yeah, it might be.
This one stars Jim Gaffigan. Now, I've been following Jim Gaffigan in his career ever since he started showing up on like Late Night with Conan O'Brien. I mean, we're talking like early 2000s. And everybody knows who Jim Gaffigan is now, but, you know, 20-some years ago, not a whole lot of people did. I think Jim Gaffigan's one of the funniest guys on the planet. I think his stand-up is amazing. I've interviewed him, and he seems to be a really nice guy. And I've watched his career. He will oftentimes do comedy, and, you know, that's his wheelhouse. But he dips his toe into dramatic acting. And so that's what we've got with Linoleum. And Linoleum is coming out in a little about 6 weeks or so. It looks weird. It's definitely a Sundance kind of movie. It's a quirky, independent film that plays around with reality. But it looks like it's going to be interesting to watch. Speaking of movies that are playing around with reality, we've also got Bo is Afraid, which comes out in theaters on April 21st.
I'm visiting my mother tomorrow.
Hi, Carrot. It's Mom. I'm just calling to say that I'm so excited to see you tomorrow.
Are you at the airport?
I'm on my way. It's not safe, is it?
Welcome back.
I hit you with my car.
What?
Feeling sad about going home, Bo? Must feel totally unreal.
This is the latest from Ari Aster, who did movies like Heredity and Midsommar. He dips his toe in horror all the time. I mean, that's obviously what Hereditary and Midsommar are. Even though a lot of people question whether Midsommar is a horror movie because of there's elements to it that make you think it's not, but it's absolutely a horror movie. But Bo is Afraid, it's an A24 movie, and if anyone who follows sort of what different studios produce, A24 is, that's the real trendy stuff. That's the fancy stuff. That's what Miramax was in the early 90s, you know what I mean? So Bo is Afraid is it's essentially, I think it's about anxiety, but it's about a guy who has almost like this break with reality, and it's his anxiety manifesting in almost hallucinatory ways. I don't have anxiety, so I don't think I'm going to have an attachment to this movie, but I'm curious to see it. It does look like it's going really into bizarre territory, which can be really neat for like a Charlie Kaufman movie. But it can also sometimes get pretentious and problematic. And this guy's known for doing that kind of stuff. So this one, I'm curious to see it, but it could go either way for me. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about House Party and Koala Man. Support for Fat Guys at the Movies is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Their products are precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. With Manscaped's performance package, the ultimate men's hygiene bundle. Join over 7 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code FATGUYS at manscaped.com. If my math is correct, that's about 14 million balls. Look, whether you're a fit snack or a big fat slob like me, you've got some hedge trimming to do. And, you know, let's face it, life is full of wrinkles, and so are your privates. So personal grooming can be terrifying. But what's great about Manscaped's tools is they're waterproof and they're lightweight. It also has an LED light so you can see where you're trimming your nooks and crannies. Best of all, the Lawnmower 4.0 reduces the risks of nicks and accidents using advanced skin-safe technology with a ceramic blade. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code FATGUYS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code FATGUYS. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tool for the job with Manscaped. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about House Party. Now, here's the thing with House Party, okay? The House Party is a movie that's coming out this week. I don't know if it's in limited or wide release. And it's from Warner Brothers Pictures. It's a reboot of the House Party franchise, of which they've had like five or six movies. The first three were theatrical in the 90s, and then they did a couple direct-to-video. They may have done six of these. But they're rebooting it. It was a very profitable series. It didn't cost much. It didn't have any huge stars in it. And they kept the budget very, very low. And even though the movies only made about $20-25 million each, they were wildly profitable for the studio. So they've decided to reboot it and make a new House Party movie. LeBron James is behind this one. Well, this was not screened. I don't know. I got no word whatsoever from Warner Brothers about this. No attempt to reach out. No attempt to, hey, are you? I didn't even get sent a trailer. The only way I got a chance to see a trailer for this was when I was at the movie theater seeing another movie. So I have no connection to this new House Party movie. So I said, well, since they're not showing it to me, I'm going to go back and watch the original House Party from 1990 with Kid and Play, which I'd never seen. I mean, I was 19, I think, when that movie came out, 18, 19 years old. I mean, I was a white kid from the suburbs. So it was a different type of movie than what would necessarily, I wasn't that easy target for it. But I remember when it came out, I never saw it, but I was always curious about it. So I decided now's a good time to watch it. Let, you know, the heck with the 2023 version of House Party. Let's talk about 1990s version. Two teens from the hood host a rockin' house party while one tries to avoid some bullies.
If my pops finds out I got in trouble in school today, I'm definitely going to be on punishment. There's a party tonight at Peter's house. Can I go?
You're not going nowhere.
Did you hear anything about a party tonight?
At least not any good ones.
What you got to say now, punk?
How much more trouble can I get into?
Hey, eraser head.
Look, I'm in prison.
Yo, y'all, look who fell into the gig.
Hey, this ain't Soul Train.
Okay, so where on our way to?
The house party.
I saw on Wikipedia refer to this group of film as hood movies. I don't know if that's politically incorrect or not, but anyways, there was a big explosion of movies that took place in sort of like the suburban hood in the 90s. And it went everywhere from really hardcore stuff like Boys in the Hood to something like House Party. And, you know, they had the gangland stuff and there was a bunch of those, you know, Juice and even Dead Presidents and stuff like that from the 90s. But then there was the more fun stuff and even the spoofs of them all that Keenan Ivory Wayans did. You know, stuff like I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker. But House Party was just a fun, silly little movie. I mean, it's rated R, but it's rated R, I think, just for some language and some sexual humor. But it's basically the story of these two teenagers in high school who are involved in doing this house party. And then when they say house party, it's just a bunch of people dancing and playing music. It's not like a movie where they're destroying the house or anything. It's just they're dancing and playing music and, you know, goofing off. And it's got like Martin Lawrence in it. But what's so funny about it watching it now is all the actors in it, they're all like in their late 20s. Some of them are even in their 30s. I mean, Kid and Play were mid-20s, at least, at the time they made this movie. Martin Lawrence is in it, and he was like 29 when he made this movie. So it looks a little odd to watch these people in a high school situation, especially the bullies who are from their own little rap group. And they're, I mean, you're like, well, what? How many times did they flunk out? I mean, why didn't they just leave? These people are, you know, they look like they're old enough to drink, and then some. So, it's a fun little movie. It's a goofy little movie. It has all the sort of like the Wikipedia's Hood movie elements to it, where you've got the rockin' soundtrack, and you've got the very colorful clothing and the cut of the clothing that was very popular at the time during the hip hop time in the late 80s, early 90s. It's a cute movie. I mean, it's not, it has some uninviting characters, but you know, for an R-rated movie, it's pretty squeaky clean, and it's fun. It's on HBO Max. Actually, I think all the House Party movies are the original ones, at least 1, 2, and 3 are on HBO Max. But ultimately, you know, this original House Party, it's harmless and fun, and this is a nice romp through 90s hip hop culture. I enjoyed it for what it was. You know, it was breezed through at about 90 minutes. I don't know if the new one's any good, but I'll have to say that the original House Party kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Koala Man. This is a new series that is on Hulu. A schlubby Australian man dresses up as a wannabe superhero and faces off against weirder and weirder foes.
They call me Koala Man. I've made it my life's mission to clean up our streets, help the innocent, and snuff out evil.
Grass is half a centimeter too long, mate. That was a close one.
For I am...
Kevin!
Yes, Big Greg?
You gotta fix the bloody internet.
Dad's gone crazy, hasn't he?
He's perfect.
Go, go, Koala Claws!
I still need to invent those, don't I?
This is one of those adult animation cartoons. And it's made by Justin Roiland, who does Rick and Morty and Solar Opposites. His fingerprints are all over it. But it's also based on this guy's just this little cartoon of Koala Man. And what's really interesting about it, I mean, it's funny and it's got raunchy jokes in it. It has a lot of Australian-centric jokes. Like, they have a whole episode on show bags. Now, if you're an American or you're not Australian, you have no idea what a show bag is. They're like little gift bags that you could buy. It goes all the way back to like county fairs and festivals that they would give like, you know, jams and jellies in. But they're a huge thing in Australia. I never knew about these because I'm not Australian. But it does have that Australian angle to it, and that gives it a little bit of uniqueness. But what's funny about it is when the series starts, is I think there's 8 episodes on Hulu, and they dropped them all this week. And the first couple episodes are very low-key. I mean, there's some weird stuff that happens, but ultimately, he's this guy who wants to be a superhero, and he wears a koala mask. And he does Boy Scout kind of things, like he'll help people take their trash out, and... an old lady crossed the street, that kind of stuff. But somehow, behind the scenes, he got hooked up with Justin Roiland, who, of course, does, like I said, Rick and Morty and Solar Opposites. So after about the second or third episode, you start to see Justin Roiland's fingerprints on this thing. And it starts to get weird. And then it starts going into that extremely raunchy and inappropriate territory. So the first episode is very low key, and it has a crazy thing going on, but not at the level that you normally would see with Rick and Morty or Solar Opposites. By the fourth or fifth episode, things are starting to get really weird and really raunchy. And I mean, almost to the point where they're trying too hard on a couple episodes, but I mean, it's funny. It's not the same as Solar Opposites or Rick and Morty, because it has this bizarre sort of dry Australian influence to it. And so it does have these clashing personalities in how the show comes about, but you can see them figuring out their middle ground. And I'll tell you this, I'm pretty sure Koala Man has not turned into what the original creators wanted it to be, and it's not quite what Justin Roiland wants it to be, but I think they're finding a happy medium. I mean, it's cool enough, but it's at first I was like, oh, this is a little more just down to earth. And then crazy things started happening. I'm like, oh, it's clearly going down the Solar Opposites path, because Solar Opposites is a Hulu show as well. Ultimately, it's fun. I mean, it takes some time to settle into the Rick and Morty humor, but that Australian outlook gives the show a unique feel. I'm going to say it kind of rocks, and we'll see how it goes in the second season.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about A Man Called Otto and Plane. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about A Man Called Otto. First of all, this has been in limited release. It came out in very limited release, I think, right at the new year. And it was like in two theaters. And then it expanded to a couple hundred last week, and now it's kind of going fully wide. One other thing to know about this is based on, well, it's based on a book, but it's based on a movie from Sweden called A Man Called Ove. And that's actually based on a Swedish book. It's a remake. It's an American remake. There's nothing new with this kind of stuff. And, well, first, let me play the trailer, just get that out of the way. Tom Hanks stars as a suicidal, cantankerous old man who unexpectedly finds meaning in helping others.
Give me the keys.
Hello.
Hello.
What's your name?
Otto.
Otto?
O-T-T-O.
I'm Abby. O-T-T-O.
Got some new neighbors.
Hi.
Nedwid husband.
I brought you some food.
Okay. Bye.
Are you always this unfriendly?
I am not unfriendly.
Okay, you're not. Every word you say is like a warm cuddle.
Like I said, it's based on a Swedish movie, which in turn was based on a Swedish book. And this is one of those films, it triggers this thing. And I'm not even going to talk about the movie yet, but it triggers things in people. And I'm getting tired of this crap. I'm seeing people going, oh, I like this movie better when it was called A Man Called Ove. The original Swedish movie was so much better. Or even worse, the people going, I read the book, and Tom Hanks isn't exactly what I pictured as this character in the book, so I'm not even going to see it. I refuse to see the remakes. Gosh, America, be more original. Okay, first of all, this is not the first time that you've had an American English language remake of a foreign film. Second of all, A Man Called Ove came out like 10 years ago. I guarantee you, that more Americans have actually seen this movie now, before it even came out wide, than have seen the entirety of A Man Called Ove. Now, you can stand by, oh, yeah, that means you're stupid and you don't like a foreign language. You know, it's okay to not want to watch a movie with subtitles. I understand that. And today's technology, you don't need to. But even then, what's wrong with casting a different character? I mean, it's Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks is a good actor. I don't think Tom Hanks can play Grumpy. Well, watch the damn movie and find out. Good Lord. You know, it's sort of like the people who like RRR, which is winning awards and, you know, it was in the Golden Globes and everything. It's a good movie. I talked about it a couple weeks ago. And there are people, I literally have seen articles like, don't watch RRR on Netflix. The English dub is terrible. You got to listen to it in the original language. You go, okay, well, I'll listen to the original language. Oh, no, that's not the right language. Because, you know, of course, there's a billion languages in India. But here's the thing. You don't get to decide how I watch a movie. You don't get to choose. If you want to watch something in Japanese or Hindi or whatever the language is, fine. But if I want to put on the dubbing, you don't get to choose that. It is not your decision. If I want to watch an English language remake of a previous film, like, you remember that movie Wreck that was made into the movie Quarantine? I hate that one. Oh, I liked it better when it was the first movie. Well, fine. You can be a pretentious a-hole and sit down, you idiot. This is reaching a larger audience. If I've written books, and if somebody adapted my book in an English language, and then they said, oh, hey, you know, people in India are going to love it. Let's do an Indian version. I'd be like, great. That's a larger audience to see my stuff. So anyway, the movie itself, it's a charming little movie. It's directed by Mark Foster, who did, one of the movies he did a James Bond movie, The Quantum of Solace, but he also did stuff like Stranger Than Fiction. And he does some real out-of-the-box kind of almost at times surreal movies. And he's actually a very good director. It's a charming little movie. I came at it with my back up a little bit because it was like one of these last-minute, hey, consider me for an award kind of thing. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's just lazy. But you know what? As much as I was resistant to the movie because it looked like it was going to be corny, as much as I resisted that, I was sucked in. And a lot of it goes to Tom Hanks, his performance. I mean, does he play mean and nasty? No, but he plays Grumpy well. He's Tom Hanks, for crying out loud. He's a good actor. Tom Hanks can play more than just the nice guy. And I think he proves it here. You know, I mean, so trust him in his acting and allow yourself to say, well, I mean, the idea that people are going to, I don't want to see this movie because it's not exactly what I want it to be. Oh, shut up, you stupid, pretentious idiot. So, yeah, I mean, it's sweet. It actually, it sucks you in before you know it. You're like, God, I kind of like this movie. I mean, I didn't love it. It's not the greatest movie ever, but, you know, Tom Hanks works well outside his comfort zone as a grump, and the story will win your heart over some obvious corniness. I'm going to say it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next movie, another big release this week with the most unique title ever to a film. And that is Plane. A commercial jet is forced to land on a lawless island in the Philippines, and the captain must join forces with a fugitive on board to save the passengers.
Mayday, mayday, mayday. Trailblazer 119, we are dark.
They went down somewhere in the Jolo Island cluster. It's run by separatists and militias. The Filipino army won't even go there anymore.
I better go after them. My passengers, my responsibility. I'm gonna need your help. Then why'd they lock you up?
No one cares what really happened. But they say redemption can be found in the most unusual places.
I love Gerard Butler because he came on so strong. Came on so strong with 300. I mean, he had done movies in Scotland and the UK, but he came on so strong with 300, and then he just kind of crashed. And he just seems always, in every movie you see him, and he just seems so grateful to have a job. And he's done some crap, don't get me wrong, but I always think he brings some energy to it, and he has a uniqueness to him. And he's kind of built this cottage industry of Liam Neeson kind of movies. You know, if you see Gerard Butler in a movie, you know it's going to be this fisticuff action movie. Same thing as if you see Liam Neeson in a movie nowadays, you're like, oh, he's going to be in a car chasing somebody trying to kill them for revenge. So I love the fact that Gerard Butler still is making these movies. And some of the movies that he's been in, you know, like something like Greenland a couple years ago, that actually is not a bad little movie. It kind of surprised me. You know, I mean, yeah, like that first Olympus Has Fallen was pretty good. I mean, I think he brings it. And even a movie like Geostorm, which was a terrible film, he's good in it. I enjoyed his performance. And I like him in this one. It works. This is a completely predictable, standard action movie. And it's the very typical make Americans terrified to fly anywhere internationally type movie. Because, like I said, they land in this lawless place that's run by militias and rebels. And it doesn't matter where in the world you are, whether you're there or you're in South America or you're in Africa and you get caught by warlords. But it works. I mean, it's not trying to do anything but entertain people. Now, also, Mike Colter is in this movie. You don't know who that is. If you've ever watched the TV show Evil, which is on Paramount Plus, it was originally on CBS, but I think it just moved to a Paramount Plus exclusive. He plays the priest in it. And he's this fugitive that ended up on this flight. And then when it crashes, he's got to help them survive because you got people ready to kill him. And he does a good job. He shows that he's got some acting chops and potential big screen like ability to be a movie star. And we'll see what happens with him as his career goes on. But I mean, the one thing this movie doesn't do, which when you get a movie like that, anytime you deal with hostages and kidnapping is how awful do you make the situations? How much brutality do you show on screen? And I'm not a fan of that. I don't like to watch a movie of people getting tortured and raped and murdered and beheaded and all that kind of stuff. And are there violence things that happen in this movie? Yes. But they don't go over the top and they don't spend a half hour just putting misery on the hostages. It's not their movie even. It's Gerard Butler and Mike Colter's movie. They do a good job. They're fun. I enjoyed this movie. I mean, the title's stupid. I mean, it is kind of a plain Jane title, if you get my joke. All right, I should retire right now from that joke. Anyways, no, it's fun. It's surprisingly well made. This Gerard Butler action thriller paints by the numbers, but yeah, it's very good at painting by the numbers. I enjoyed it. It's an escape. It's a vacation from reality. You can live vicariously by watching this movie and you don't have to get kidnapped by Filipino terrorists. I'm going to say Plane kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr, I've got a review of The Pale Blue Eye and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring the British Empire. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the movie reviews and talk about The Pale Blue Eye. This is on Netflix. It came out actually last week. I just had too busy of a show to talk about last week. But this one stars Christian Bale. It's directed by Scott Cooper. And it certainly feels like an award movie. I'm just surprised it came out so late. I think this actually could have gotten a little bit of awards traction if they would have released it earlier. But you know, Netflix only has so many movies they can really campaign for, and they kind of threw behind stuff like Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio and Glass Onion. Those things are getting a lot of traction. But The Pale Blue Eye just kind of got lost in award season. That's kind of a shame. So let's talk about it now. A widowed inspector is brought to West Point to solve a murder and teams up with a young Edgar Allan Poe.
Detective Landor, one of our cadets,
hanged himself last night.
That's a matter for the coroner.
I'm afraid that's not the end of it. His heart was carved from his chest.
What type of fella could do this?
It'd have to be
a madman.
Easy to decipher this.
Rumor has it there are instructions for immortality.
I was very impressed with this movie. First of all, I was very impressed by the cinematography. With a movie like this that takes place in the winter at West Point, in the dark, in time before electric lights, nowadays it's very tempting to shoot it all in shadow with that gray, no contrast cinematography. And maybe it's because it's a Netflix film, because I don't see that as much on Netflix. I think Netflix at least has a vision of having a little more contrast and brightness to the cinematography. It's actually got a great lush palette. And even though it's a lot of grays and blacks and whites, you know, you got darkness against a very white background because it's wintertime at West Point. When they're inside, yes, they're by candlelight, but you can see everybody and everything's well lit, but it still looks like a period piece. So I love the cinematography of this movie. And the other thing is Christian Bale can sometimes get overly dark and broody in his performances, whether it's Batman or something else. But I he has a certain amount of humanity to him, which I think is good, because he tends to suppress his humanity in his acting a lot. He has it. He can do it. It's just when they go dark for Christian Bale, it can get very dark. And I like the fact that this one doesn't. And also, I can't say enough about Harry Melling as Edgar Allan Poe. I mean, he looks the part. He looks exactly like Edgar Allan Poe. If you've not seen this guy before, if you ever saw the Coen brothers, Ballad of Buster Scruggs, he played the mute. I think he was like a circus freak that didn't have any arms or legs in one of their shorts. He's not a well-known actor, but he looks exactly like Edgar Allan Poe without the mustache and a little bit younger. And he does a great job, a very compelling and binding performance. So the acting's fantastic in this movie, and it has this horror element to it. Because the mystery is not just about a murder, but it's about potential, almost occult stuff going on behind the scenes. And of course, you throw that in with Edgar Allan Poe, who has such a well-known connection to horror, because that's what most of his writing has been remembered for, even though he did other things. But it shows Edgar Allan Poe is a real person. I mean, he's not just this weirdo. I mean, he is a weirdo. He is strange. He comes across as very unnerving. But you can see him as a real person. They don't present him as a caricature. And that's actually really good. And it's a neat little story. And it's a mystery that it moves. You see this period piece that's 2 hours and 10 minutes long. And you like kind of go, but then you start watching it and it moves. It has a momentum to it that really works. And it clicks. It delves into enough horror that it can be classified as at least partly a horror movie, but really, at its core, it's a mystery. And I just thought it worked out exceptionally well. I was very surprised at how much I did like this movie because, like I said, I mean, I've seen plenty of period pieces with Christian Bale. I'm talking about like more than 150 years old type period pieces. and they can be very dry. And his character can be very, I should say, understated. I mean, almost to a fault. But I think he does a really good job developing the character and developing the mystery. They balance between characterization and mystery, and it all does tie together. So yeah, I'm going to have to say The Pale Blue Eye, it really worked. The well-balanced cinematography adds the depth of this clever mystery and offers some strong performances by Bale and Melling. The Pale Blue Eye rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish things up with the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on an older series. It's a British show. As you know, and I talked about this last week because I did Dairy Girls last week. And I love the British TV shows. I've always loved them ever since I was a kid, because when I was a kid, we did not have cable. So I was stuck with the four networks, which was NBC, ABC, and CBS, and then PBS, which was kind of a network. And there was some really boring stuff for kids to watch on PBS, but they did a lot of British stuff. And I loved the British programming, especially the British comedy. I'd watch stuff like Monty Python and Dave Allen and stuff like that. And that's what kind of got me my taste for British shows. And one of my favorite shows that I watch every year, and I burn through it casually in the background, is Red Dwarf. And I talked about Red Dwarf last week or the week before, which I love. And one of the characters in it, Rimmer, is played by a guy named Chris Berry. And in order to watch Red Dwarf, you got to have BritBox, which is through Amazon Prime. So you got to pay for your Prime subscription, then you got to pay for a BritBox subscription. But BritBox is like $5 a month. And I watch enough British programming that it works. And like any streaming service, when you watch something, it'll have a little thing. Hey, you watch that. Why don't you try this? And it suggested The British Empire, which stars Chris Berry, who's also in Red Dwarf. And I'm like, yeah, let me give it a shot. It started in like 1991. And it actually ran for like 8 or 9 seasons. And it's a workplace comedy. And well, let's play the trailer. A well-meaning but incompetent busybody is put in charge of a leisure center and struggles to not alienate the staff, patrons, or everyday people who just stop by.
Gordon Bridges,
meet a man and his empire.
This is a leisure center for the community, Colin. We can't have people strolling in off the streets.
He's got a certain way with words.
Which brings me to another general point, personal freshness.
And his staff just love him.
I believe that every child in Europe has the right to a foundation course in trampolining before the age of 12.
Gordon's empire building again.
If I'm to go to Brussels, I want this place to be as sharp and effective as possible.
There's not a really good single trailer for it. That's just sort of an amalgamation of a bunch of different series. But sort of like Fawlty Towers. You know, if you ever watched Fawlty Towers with John Cleese, he was an incompetent guy who ran a hotel. This one is an incompetent guy who runs a leisure center, which is a community recreation center. That's what we call it in America. You know, they got a swimming pool and squash courts and a sauna and a gymnasium and all that kind of stuff. And the character of Gordon Bridges is, he's a real prat. He is just... he's not a jerk. He's not mean. There's no malice behind him. And that's kind of the gem of this, is he's just stupid and he's ignorant of his own stupidity and his own incompetence, but he means well. And so he gets in these scrapes, and as much as people can't stand him, again, there's no malice behind it. Whereas like actually the character of Rimmer in Red Dwarf that he plays, that guy has a darker side. There's no dark side to Gordon Bridges. And that makes it kind of charming, because people can't stand working for him, but they don't hate him. But then they also have this dark line of humor, and they have some outrageous stuff happen to him. Like in one episode, they think he's dead. They think he got killed overseas when he was at a conference. And so they have a funeral for him, and like hundreds of people show up because everybody's excited that he's dead because they hated him so much. And so it has that really dark edge to it. And it has this absurdity, and it's that outrageous, like 90s British outrageousness. You know, like in America, you can have something that's outrageous, but you got to have it be completely outrageous. But this one, you can just have something silly happening and it just sort of steamrolls. And the way the Brits put this together, it really works. Like one of the guys who helps him run the center, he's a guy into all this homeopathic and holistic and natural stuff, but he's always sick, and he's got like a weeping sore on his arm that's always been there. And it's just like, he's horribly unhealthy, but he loves the health angle to stuff. So it has those contradictions. It's a fun little show. I started watching it and just, I'll casually watch it. And I found myself just hitting next episode. It's very popular. It's one of the most popular shows that has ever been on the BBC. And, you know, like I said, I would consider it similar to Fawlty Towers. It's very British and it has a lot of British references to it. And you kind of have to have an awareness of slang and the British culture to sort of get some of the stuff. It's very funny. It's worth checking out if you like British humor. So Chris Berry shines in this dry but outrageous workplace comedy. British Empire rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
And that's it. Next week when we come back, I'm going to be talking about The Sun and Missing. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.